We are the Remnant of Tucson Church. Here is a message from Pastor Jason McKibben.
So if you have been with us, you know we're going through the book of Exodus. And the idea is that Exodus is the children of Israel coming out of slavery. They're coming out of slavery to go through the wilderness, to go into the promised land. And that's kind of the big theme here. Out of slavery, through the wilderness, and into not just the promised land, but an abundant life is what Jesus called it. And so we want to do the same thing in our life. God, whatever, wherever you've been in your life, you're coming out of the bondage, the slavery, the sin in your life. Each one of us has been in that situation. We'll talk more about that this morning because we're in that phase of the Exodus. We're coming out of the slavery. And then a lot of us have been through the wilderness trials as well, where there's tough times and there's maybe there's trials and there's situations. And the great thing about the wilderness, I won't spend too much time on it, but the great thing about the wilderness is like the gym. It prepares you for what's next and it gets you ready for what's next. And it's like a battle zone. It's where you grow. And what a lot of people need to understand about the Exodus story is you need to be mentally ready to go through the wilderness. You have to be in the right mindset to go through the wilderness. And then not only that, you get to the end. So you're out through an end, and the end is obviously the promised land, the abundance. And it's this great time, and it's so exciting. I have a few things here of what that kind of looks like for us, four P's. Your purpose, being in the promised land, you have purpose. You don't just have a job. You don't just have a role. You have a calling in your life. And your life is, it feels like there's a flourishing aspect to your life. Because you're not just getting a paycheck. You're not just living paycheck to paycheck, trying to get by. But God has a call in your life. And that's not to say that whatever it is that you're doing isn't worthy of purpose. Because we can find purpose in nearly any position. I would even go as far as saying, if you are working in the fast food industry, you can find purpose in that. If you're working whatever it may be, you can find purpose in what God's doing. And so we can find ourselves in the promised land, even in McDonald's behind, you know, the iron or the flat top and working in making hamburgers. But we can find purpose there. So there's purpose and there's place. You know, when we're looking at what it means to be in the promised land and defining it, I think your place, the home you have, the area that you're at, it's a good place that you're in. And I don't know if you feel like Tucson is the place to be. Some people love Tucson. Some people hate Tucson. I was just talking to somebody yesterday, and they're like, oh, Tucson, ugh. And I was like, I saw a bobcat like 4 days ago. It was kind of cool. Like, we have a really beautiful, cool desert out here. I was talking to somebody from Phoenix, and I was like, you know, and we also have the U of A, which just destroyed ASU sports, you know. But of all these things, you have purpose. You have your place, your home. You have people. You have purpose, place, and people. The people in your life, the flourishing in your life is not just for you, it's to be shared. And now think about your weekends or your weeks this week and Thanksgiving. And how was your Thanksgiving table? Does it sound like it was the Garden of Eden, or was it chaotic? Was there drama? Was there somebody talking about something you didn't feel comfortable talking about? Was there, you know, whatever it may be. I think when we look at a flourishing community, we see these things. And then finally, even the provision. I wrote Proverbs 13:22 down. I'll read it to you. A wise man stores up an inheritance for their children's children. And I think about that. And I think a lot of people think about that. When you're talking about where God's called you to be and bringing you into the place that he's called you to be, I think the Bible tells us that there's wisdom and not just considering provision for our families, but our children's children. And there's a lot of young faces in this room. I noticed that. And so you guys, most people don't have children, let alone children's children. So you got time. You got time to get to this place, and it's going to take time. For Israel, it took them 40 years to go through the wilderness. But what I wanted to do for you guys this morning as we're heading into this passage and we're going through these plagues, I want to remind you of the goal. And this is abundant life. And the getting in and all these things that we talked about, it's not just these monetary things or possessions, the place, the home. It is an active relationship with Jesus Christ. It is a relationship with Jesus. That is the ultimate goal. But that relationship with Jesus is going to be like a river where these blessings are flowing from it. And there's not, like, I'm not trying to be a prosperity teacher. I hope that's not what we're getting right now. But there's a blessing that comes from pursuing the Lord and being a diligent worker and fighting for your future. And I want to encourage you guys with this, because we can't be in the promised land if we don't go through the wilderness. And we can't go through the wilderness if we don't come out of slavery. And so now we go back in time. We have this vision of what the promised land is going to look like. And now we go back in time to Egypt, and the people of Israel are in slavery. In Exodus 2, 23 through 25, everything changes for the Exodus story. You guys can read that in your own time, but just to summarize what happens is the children of Israel were in slavery, and they cry out to God for help, and God remembers his covenant that he made with Abraham. And it wasn't like God's like, oh yeah, I forgot about these guys. There they are. I've made a promise to them. They cry out to God, and the crying out is what begins this process of them coming out of Egypt. And the reason why I want you to see the future, I want us all to see this future place, is because most Christians believe in God. Most Christians believe in Jesus, and they raise their hand, and they make the confession, and they say, I want to follow Jesus, but they're not willing to build upon that belief. And so they believe in Jesus, they believe in God, but do they build tomorrow? Do they build their future? Do they look to what's next? Are you working on your relationship with God, or have you just checked the boxes of your faith and you're good with where you're at? Step one is crying out. Most Christians, I mean, to be a Christian, you got to do that. So most people do that. Most Christians do that. All Christians do that. They cry out for God. They believe. But the next step is to head to that place, to head to the promised land. And I wanted to, on that, you know, just talk about this idea of you. Look, and looking at your life, like, think about yourself, reflect on yourself and your situation and what you're doing. If you are born into slavery, what is the next generation do if you're born into slavery? Well, if you're a slave and you have children, well, by nature, they are slaves as well. And so there are some people in this room where they have a very godly father or mother who they are now the second generation of faith. And they're living that out. And there's some people in this room, maybe their grandmother, their grandfather, they're the ones that were following the Lord. And their sons and daughters, they follow the Lord. And now it's you that are following the Lord. And there's this chain reaction of these. This is now what we're doing. This is what our family does. We pursue the Lord. But there's also people in this room that you're generation number one. You're the first generation out where you're saying, my house, as for me and my household, like Joshua would say, we will serve the Lord. That's what we're going to do. And so my sons, my daughters, they're going to serve the Lord, and their kids, their children's children, right? Going back to Proverbs 13. I want there to be a chain reaction of this and serving God coming from my family. And if you want that, you have to come out of Egypt first and foremost. And so last week when we met and we talked, we covered plagues 1 through 3. And the plagues isn't just a judgment on Egypt. The plagues is God, Yahweh, the creator, a showdown with the false gods of Egypt. And so Yahweh says, I want to get these people out. The first thing we got to address is the Egyptian gods of instant gratification. And we talked about that last week. We'll hit on it a little bit more this week. But the Egyptian gods of instant gratification were addressed in the first three plagues. The lie that we highlighted was the lie of later. So we noticed that in the first plagues, there was a lie. And the lie was, hey, we'll get to serving God tomorrow. I'll let you guys do that. We'll take care of that. But it's going to be tomorrow. And when we're in that mindset of I will serve God later, we're never going to get to serving God. And so if we want to get out of slavery, if we want to rid ourselves of the slavery mindset, we have to be doers of the word, not just hearers of the word. We have to be children of God that hear the call and heed the call in the moment. when God calls us to do things and not wait for a later time. The God of instant gratification, how do we battle it? Well, we attack the lie of later. We don't wait till tomorrow. We do what we do now. And these plagues, 4 through 6, they're going to address the lie of compromise. And so there's the lie of instant gratification. What can I get now? And there's the lies of compromise, which is essentially, what can I get later? What's next? The abundance. Now that I believe in God, I cried out to the Lord, what's next? And I don't know if you guys think about this verse as often as I do, but Jesus said, many people will cry out and say, I cried out, Lord. Many people will prophesy and do wonders. But when they die, I will say, I don't know you. I don't know who you are. And so it's important for us to not just cry out to God, but build upon that. And Satan uses compromise to get us to settle. You know, I think what Satan has done a really good job of in America is he's gotten people to settle at I believe and end there. And their faith with Jesus ends with, I've checked the box. These are the things that I believe in, but I'm not going to serve God. And so God's going to look at the children of Israel and say, plagues 4 through 6 are all about trying to get them to move to the next level. I have this this note here, and I want to talk about it. I really like interrogation videos. Does anybody watch those? People get interrogated. I love that kind of stuff. If you don't watch that kind of stuff, you're missing out. It's good YouTube stuff, okay? So if I'm ever bored, I'll just watch a 2-hour interrogation of somebody. Just an intense, crazy situation. But there's something called the Reed Technique. Anybody know what the Reed Technique is? You guys heard of this before? Okay, I'll teach you what the Reed Technique is. And by the way, I'll start off with this. Confessions, they're a slippery slope. There's a lot of dirty working interrogators out there that will just get anybody to confess anything, okay? So that aside, the Reed Technique can be used for bad, but this is what it essentially is, and I use it on my kids all the time, okay? And it works. So if you're a parent, take notes, because this is how you get your kids to confess things. And my kids are guilty. They're not innocent, okay? So just hear me out on this. But anyway, the Reed Technique is this process. I think it's about 10 steps, and you go through these 10 steps of setting up to get to this point. And you can see it step by step. Like the first thing is build rapport. And there even is like the good cop, bad cop dynamic. There's the, hey, do you want a soda? Let me get you a soda. Read you your rights. No big deal. Just, if you don't want to talk, you don't have to say anything, but I'm here to help you. You know, and so they're like, oh yeah, you're here to help me. Let me tell you everything that happened. So obviously it goes on and on and on. And ultimately what it gets to is the interrogator asks a question. And the question is essentially, did you do it? And the answer, of course, is no, I didn't do it. And the way they get people to confess to the crimes that they did is they say, well, maybe it was an accident, right? Was it an accident? And you would be surprised at how many people will say, yeah, you know what? You're right, it was an accident. I didn't mean to do it. They came at me, or I was just defending myself. And so we go from no confession to they confess to their murder. Just like that. And the whole premise of the Reed Technique is, I would say, using something that every human has inside of them, which is the willingness and the desire to compromise, right? They weren't going to confess before, but did you do it a little bit? Which is what I do to my kids. Like, did you hit your brother? No, a little bit. Yeah, it was a little bit of a punch. Okay. And it's like, okay, well now I know. You just told me that you did it. But that's how you do it. That's how you get your kids. But this is what they do. And it's in us to compromise. It's in us to take the easy route. And so when we are following Christ, we believe. I believe in Jesus. I raise my hand. I want to worship him. I want to follow him. But then when it comes to my finances, well, God, that's something that I'm going to compromise on. I'm not willing to give my life over to you in that area. Or God, I'm willing to follow you. But when it comes to the way I interact with my friends and maybe drink or smoke or whatever it may be, that's something that I'm going to keep. That's you know, I have that under control, God. I have that taken care of. I have the drinking problem under control. It's only this many drinks. I'm fine. And so we make these compromises in our life. Instead of turning it all over to God, we stop in certain areas. And I want to encourage you guys this morning, odds are you have some area of compromise in your life. As do I. There's compromises all over our lives of reasons why we don't fully trust and follow God. And if we want to be in the promised land, we got to come out of these compromises. And so we'll get into it. We'll start in chapter 8, verse 20, and we'll see how this plays out. Chapter 8, verse 20, and the Lord said to Moses, "Rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh, and as he comes out to the Lord or to the water, then say to him, 'Thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me.'" I love Pharaoh's little morning routine. Just wake up early in the morning, go out to the Nile River and just take the sunrise in and just check it out. Obviously, Moses is seeing that and he's taking advantage of it. We talked about this last week, the rise early in the morning. You know who you serve by when you serve him. Amen? So if I'm going to serve God now, if I'm going to serve the Lord that I'm saying I'm serving, if I'm going to serve Yahweh, I'm going to serve him when it is time, which is right now. And so a lot of people, I'm not telling, we talked about this last week. This isn't the David Goggins, wake up at 5 in the morning and knock it out, right? This isn't that message. But it is when you wake up, what are you doing when you wake up? Is it chaos in the morning? Is it check the phone in the morning? Is it check the stock market in the morning? Is it check Instagram in the morning? Or is it wake up in the morning and devote my life to God and check in with God and see how things are going? Could be 5 to 10 minutes. But that 5 to 10 minutes completely changes the trajectory of your day. Amen? Completely transforms the way you think from being a now mind, or a, I got to take care of these secular things, to no, my life is sacred and I have a purpose and a calling. And so again, we have this, we're going to have it another time on the seventh plague, but rise early in the morning. And here's what he says to Moses. We've read it a few times and I want to talk about it a little bit more now. He says, "Let my people go that they may serve me." This is a twofold command. Moses is asking a lot. God's asking a lot from Pharaoh. He's saying, first of all, let my people go. Second of all, that they may serve me. And when we come out of sin, when we come out of slavery, you got to recognize that this is the first step, right? We talked about the first step being you got to cry out to God. This is another first step item that if we do not do, there is no serving God. And that first step is, let my people go. If there is no letting go of the people and Pharaoh's still there, then there's going to be compromise in the children of Israel's lives. Is it possible, I'll ask you this, is it possible for Israel to set up their government, to set up their temple, to set up their worship, to set up their lifestyle in the land of Egypt? And the answer is no. There needs to be a cutoff here. There needs to be, Pharaoh, you are toxic, to use modern language. You are toxic. You are controlling. You want to be in every little detail, every little thing we do. It is impossible for us to serve the Lord here in Egypt. And so step one is, Pharaoh, we got to cut ties. We got to break up. This isn't working out. And so we need to end this. And I think for many people, this really is the first step if you want out of slavery. Maybe it's a relationship, a boyfriend or a girlfriend, where they are just keeping you from growing in your faith. And there needs to be a change up, right? Me and Peter did youth ministry for decades. We know what that's like. We know that there's a time. And it was hard for us because we don't like telling kids you need to break up with somebody. But we will pray, we will fast that your relationship ends, because we know there needs to be an end in order for you to be able to serve the Lord. And I was one of those kids, Peter will tell you. I was one of those kids. And you hold on to it, but you're not willing to give it up. And that's just relationships. There's so many other things in our lives where we hold on to this very valuable thing instead of letting it go. And we essentially are trying to build the church. You're trying to build your legacy, right? That's what we were talking about earlier. Your legacy, your impact from generation to generation. And you're trying to build it on soil that you cannot build it on. And you need to be out of it. You need to let go of it. And this is the first step that so many people are not willing to do, because you're starting fresh. You're starting new, and you're doing something that you're scared to do. And you're doing something that you think, well, that's going to be really time-consuming for me to start over again. But what you're doing and what you're building on, it's just not going to pan out. It's poor. poisoned. It's perverted. It's distorted. And so you need to get out of it. And so the first thing that we need to do is we need to Pharaoh to let his people go, to let the children of Israel go, because they need to go serve the Lord, and they cannot do that in Egypt. We'll see more of that in a second. Let's go to verse 21. Verse 21 says, "Let my people go that they may serve me, or else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you and your servants, on your people and into your houses. The houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they stand. And in that day, I will set apart the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there, in order that you may know that I am the Lord in the midst of the land." Verse 23, I like this verse. You can underline it with me. "I will make a difference between my people and your people." Say it again. "I will make a difference between my people and your people." The church of the United States has done its very best to eliminate the difference between God's people and the secular world. We have done everything we could do to chameleon-like the world and like blend in with the world and like, don't notice me, don't know that I'm a Christian. I want to be just like this. And God is calling the children of Israel out, and he's saying, "You start off right here. There's going to be a difference between you and them, just straight up from the start. You're going to look at them. They're going to talk different. They're going to walk different. They're going to sound different. They're going to dress different, and you're going to see the difference in the way that they work and the way that they talk compared to other people." And I would even say, just think about the way we talk, the way Christians talk. If you're a believer, you're someone who walks with the Lord, you'll notice that people notice the way you talk, that people call out the way you talk. And they'll say, "Well, why don't you curse? Or why don't you use foul language? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you make inappropriate jokes? Why don't you do the things that everybody else does?" It's so noticeable. It's so noticeable. And I want to encourage you. It's awkward. It's awkward because it's like, yeah, you're right. There's something that I have Jesus, right? This little light of mine, right? I'm going to let it shine. That's the difference. But I'm scared to sing that song because I might get made fun of. You would get made fun of if you sang a little kid song. But you get the point. I like Exodus 5:21. You guys can write that down. You can check it out. But this is when Israel first came to Pharaoh and said, "Hey, Pharaoh, can we please go right now?" And Pharaoh's like, "Okay, you want to leave? Double the work." And doubles the work. And the leaders of Israel go to Moses and they say, "Hey, Moses, you made us stinky to Pharaoh. You made us look stinky to him. And that makes us really upset that you did that to us." And what we talked about when we went over Exodus chapter 5 a few weeks ago is, why do we value Pharaoh's view of us? Why do we value that? When Pharaoh's job is to exploit my life, to use my life, empty it, and throw me away when he's done and move on to the next thing, why do I care what Pharaoh thinks of me? And to take it to more modern terms, Jesus will say, if they hate me, they're going to hate you. If they reject me, they're going to reject you. And they're going to know it. And I wouldn't say this isn't a message to go get rejected by your friends. You shouldn't be getting rejected by your friends. But there should be a very distinct difference between you and the secular person, just by who you are, the way you talk, the way you walk, the way you work, the way you worship. There's a thing behind the thing, I like to say. The thing behind the thing is we worship Yahweh. And so whatever it is I may do, it doesn't matter what my job is. Doesn't matter what I'm clocking in to do. I have a vocation. I have a calling behind me. And that calling is to create a community, not just create a community, but to serve a God and to worship this God. And so I'm going to do that. If it's flipping burgers, I'm going to flip those burgers, dude, so hard. I'm going to flip them so good. And it's going to be quick, too. Lefty. I'm going lefty right now, right? I'm going to do that. And I don't know what you do, but God wants you to serve him in what you do. He doesn't want you to quit your job and be a pastor or to be a priest. He wants you to serve him in what you do. and it should be distinguished from the rest. Read it again, verse 23. I will make a difference between my people and your people. I love that. Amen. Let's go to verse 25. Then Pharaoh called to Moses and Aaron and said, go sacrifice to your God in the land. And essentially what he's saying, because you might miss it, I'll read it to you guys the way he said it. Hey, you can go sacrifice. Don't serve God. You can go do your worship service. You can go sacrifice, but you're going to do it in my backyard. I'm hosting. I don't want you going out. I'm not letting you go. We're all going to be unified. We're going to stay unified together on this one. You're going to do it in my backyard. So he says, go sacrifice to the Lord in the land. So Moses says, in verse 26, it is not right to do so. For we would be sacrificing the abomination of the Egyptians to the Lord our God. If we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes, then they will not stone us. We will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as he will command us. And so Pharaoh said, I will let you go that you may sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness. Only you shall not go very far. Do you see how controlling Pharaoh is in these two verses, in these two sentences? The first thing he says is, you can do it in my backyard. You want to kill things, you can do it in my backyard, which is weird. But he says that. And the second thing he says is, all right, I will let you go, but you can only go this far. Do you know what that means? That means he's not really letting them go. If you are in control of how far these people go, that means there isn't a release of the person. That means that these people are not free. If they listen to Pharaoh, Pharaoh is going to do everything to be in control of it. And this doesn't just apply to Pharaoh. This applies to whatever it is that God's calling you to get out of, the toxic environment that God's calling you to get out of, which I encourage you guys, if you're interpreting that as like, oh, you know, this is me, I need to cut off, you know, whoever it is in my family. I think that there's things that you need to do before you cut people off in your family. I know Thanksgiving was probably brutal for some of you guys, and cutting off your family sounds like a good idea after some of the situations and conversations that you had at Thanksgiving. Anybody? No? I want to hear the Thanksgiving drama after service. That's all I'm trying to figure out. But that's not step one. Step one is have a conversation with these people and talk to them. But there are times and places when it's like, I don't know what to do, and I can't allow you, whoever this person is, at this point in my life, because it's you're in control. And you're controlling and you're manipulating and you're changing things. And Pharaoh is obviously in that place where he is wanting to be in control. And so what I want to point out is the God of compromise. Pharaoh is looking to use the reed technique, to use whatever he can do to get the people of Israel to compromise on their faith. Hey, you believe, but believe here in the wrong place. Hey, you believe, but I want you to do this instead. I want you to meet me in the middle. Let's crack a deal. Let's make this happen. And God's saying, no, this is the deal. Let my people go that they may serve me in the wilderness. That's the deal. Otherwise, it's going to be 10 plagues. And it's like, there's an option. It's like, it's or else. Like, they have the option to be able to get out of this, but they're not willing to take, he's not willing to take the deal because he wants to be in control. He wants to control their lives. And because of that, if the Israelites say yes, after these four plagues, this almost sounds like a good deal, right? Think about where they were in Exodus chapter 5 and the pain that they were going through and the burden they had. They're about to get a payday off, right? This sounds like a good thing. Like, let's take the deal. But it would be compromising to what God has called them to do. And again, I want to go back to looking towards the garden, looking towards the promised land, the legacy, the impact of your life, generation to generation. I have a great grandma. I don't know her name. And I probably could figure it out if I did a little research and did a little texting, like maybe just text one person, I could figure out her name. But I have a great grandma I never met, at least I don't think I met. And I don't know her name. But I do know that she prayed for me. Isn't that crazy? That there's that legacy of, like, there was somebody out there that wasn't just thinking about her kids, praying over her kids. Because as a parent, you know what it's like. When you're a parent, you pray over your kids You pray over them when they're going to sleep. When you see them, you're like, you know, you pray over them. We're in the prayer meeting. We're praying over the kids, right? Because they're crazy. And so you got to pray for them. And you're praying over them. You're praying that God blesses them, that God gives them wisdom to not be foolish. And God gives them wisdom to create good families, right? And that's the prayer. Those two things. This is the prayer for my kids that I have. But your kids' kids, and not only your kids' kids, but your kids' kids' kids. And that's what God is all about. It's generation to generation. God doesn't want to just change your life and your children's life. He wants to change your children's 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 life. He wants to impact you and leave a legacy like that. And so I look to people like my grandpa, and I'm like, man, that guy paved the way for my life. Straight up paved the way. And he was a very generous man, and he was a very successful financially. And I know for my life that maybe I wouldn't have the financial success he had. I will not have the financial success he had. He was great at what he did, but maybe I can have the spiritual success that he had. Maybe God can use me in a spiritual way to bless those around me. And I can guarantee you that that's what his mom was praying for, that I don't remember her name, or I don't know her name. That's what she was praying for. She wanted to see that. And I want to encourage you guys. Some of you guys in this room, you are that great grandma. You are that great grandpa. You don't see it right now because you don't even see your own kid. You don't even see the second generation. But you are that individual in this room that's going to leave that lasting legacy, that impact. And so I want to encourage you, take those steps, clear the path, cut the ties with Pharaoh, cut the ties with Egypt, and move on and see the bigger picture. See what God is doing behind the scenes and what God wants to change, not just in your life, but your children's 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 life. We need to keep that in mind when we're talking about what God's doing here. Because, I mean, ultimately, we're going to get to Jesus. And I'm not going to do the children's children's children. I'm not going to go until we get to Jesus. But, I mean, we're talking about 10, 20, 30 generations removed to get to Jesus and to get to us. I just realized that just now. Like, Jesus, you're the next generation for Jesus. You are that generation. Like, he set that up for us. This is where it started. This is our tradition, right? And so going on, there's a little extermination that takes place in verses 29 through 32. And Moses gets rid of, the Lord gets rid of the flies. And we head into the fourth plague. And the fourth plague starts in verse 1 of Exodus chapter 9. The Lord said to Moses, go into Pharaoh and tell him, thus says the Lord of God to the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let them go and still hold them, behold, the hand of the Lord will be on your cattle in the field, on the horse, on the donkeys, on the camels, the oxen, and on the sheep, a very severe pestilence. And the Lord will make a difference between the livestock. There's that word difference again. The Lord will make a difference between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt. So nothing will die of all that belongs to the children of Israel. Verse 5, then the Lord appointed a set time saying, tomorrow the Lord will do this thing in the land. Tomorrow. Verse 6, so the Lord did this thing in the next day. One day, and all the livestock of Egypt died, but all the livestock of the children of Israel, not one died. And Pharaoh sent, and indeed, not even one of the livestock of the Israelites was dead. But the heart of Pharaoh became hard, and he did not let the people go. I like, you know, Pharaoh, he's such a funny guy to me. But in verse 7, he's like, just go see. Did that actually happen? Did their cows not die? And then sure enough, their cows didn't die. You know, I was thinking about it when I was studying. This has to be the single worst economic disaster for a country, potentially in world history. Like, if this is what it is, because this is like their stock market. This is like their finances. This is their future. That's what livestock was to these ancient generations. It was their future. So you have, I'll point it out, you have the cattle in the field, the horses, all the horses are dead, the donkeys, the camel, the oxen, the sheep, they all go to nothing, from an abundance to zero overnight. The Great Depression, from 1929 to 1932, that time period of the Great Depression, the S&P 500 dropped 89% in the market. On Black Tuesday, October 29th, 1929, the stock market dropped 12%, which is crazy. You know, you had $1,000 in the stock market, it is now $880, just like that, gone. From 1929 to 1932, the worst part of the Great Depression, there was an 89% drop in the S&P 500 total. Every $1,000 you had was now $110 over the course of 3 years, which is crazy to think about. 3 years, you essentially lose everything you've ever worked for in your entire life. This economic crash was one day. In one day, the Egyptians lost everything they had. Their cattle stock, horse stock, donkey stock, camel, oxen, Dogecoin, like all of it. It was a joke, by the way. There's not Dogecoin back then, just so you guys know. But it's all, I mean, some of you guys, you're like, Dogecoin, zero? Let me see what's going on. And you got to check, make sure it's not at zero. They, everything down to nothing. And looking at this and applying it to what we're doing, right? The compromise. I'm asking the question, why didn't the livestock of the children of Israel, in verse 6, why didn't theirs die? And I have two answers for you. Number one, because God didn't want that, right? That's the easy answer. That's like, you know, you almost want to boo about that. It's like, come on, that was easy. That was too easy. God didn't want it to happen, so it didn't happen. But I want to go deeper. And when I look at what is taking place, I go back to Genesis, the early books, early chapters, Genesis 4:4, Cain and Abel's issue. The issue there was sacrifice. The issue was that Abel, in Genesis chapter 4, verse 4, he dedicated the firstborn of his livestock. He gave the firstborn of his flock to the Lord, and he sacrificed to the Lord. And it was the Lord loved it. The Lord found favor or gave favor to Abel because of that. And that's going to set us up for the precedent of what we see in the future. God likes it when we give our first fruit. He likes it when we dedicate our lives, our livelihood to him. In Exodus chapter 13, we'll get to that in a few weeks. But I want to read Exodus chapter 13, verses 1 through 2, and sit on this for a few minutes. We'll go to Galatians chapter 5 as well in a second. But in Exodus chapter 13, verses 1 through 2, now that Israel is coming out of slavery, this is the first thing he wants to do. The Lord spoke to Moses saying, consecrate to me all the firstborn. Whatever opens the womb among the children of Israel, both man and beast, it is mine. And then the next thing he does in verses, the rest of the, well, verses 13 through 10 is God consecrates the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which, so get this, we have in the first few verses of Exodus 13, God saying, the firstborn's mine. And then the next passage, it's like, okay, now let's not put leaven in our bread. And it's almost like, what is, this is, God's all over the place. Essentially what he's doing is he's saying, you're going to dedicate your firstborn, and then the Feast of the Unleavened Bread for the sake of time is just a celebration of not compromising in the lives of the Israelites. For 6 days, we're going to compromise, which is about the length of most of my diets. I'm like, 75 hard, let's do it. And then about 6 days in, it's like, I want a cheeseburger, okay? So I need leaven in my life. So God calls him, go away. You know, we're going to do 7 days of, or 6 days of no leaven in our bread, and we're not going to compromise at all for 6 days. We're going to keep compromise out of our life for 6 days. And then in Galatians, I want to read Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5 through 6, probably my favorite few chapters in the Bible. You'll hear me quote them a lot. But Galatians chapter 5, verse 7. Paul says, you ran well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? So again, the topic is we're going to see it. The topic is compromise. And Paul's saying that compromise is a hindrance of truth. That there's compromise. When we compromise, we're denying truth. And then in verse 8, he says, the persuasion did not come from him who calls you. Brings it back to Exodus. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. Verse 10, I have confidence in you, in the Lord, that you will have no other mind, but he who troubles you you shall bear his judgments, whoever he is. And I, brethren, if I still preach circumcision, why do I still suffer persecution? Then the offense of the cross has ceased. I could wish that those who trouble you would even cut themselves off. And I really want to read these last three verses. Check these out. Verse 13, for you, brethren, have been called to freedom, to liberty. You've been called out of slavery. You've been called, we were giving you this modern day Exodus. Get out of the slavery. Only do not use your liberty as an opportunity for your flesh, for your cravings, for your animalistic cravings, the desires that you have. Don't go back into slavery. Verse 14, for the law is fulfilled in one word, even this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another. So going back to the question, why didn't Israel's flock die? My short answer, I guess this isn't that short, my few minute answer, is that there's a difference between the people of Israel and there's a difference between the people of Egypt. There's a difference between what you do with your legacy, your wealth, however you want to word it, however you want to put it, and the difference and the people of this world. Because your fruit, your abundance, isn't for you to be consumed. It's for others. It's devoted to the Lord. It's devoted, like he says in verse 14, you shall love your neighbor. You shall sacrificially love your neighbor as yourself. And the desire is, for me, if I got a cow and I'm going to sacrifice it, my desire, we're talking about it outside, I want the ribeye, right? That's what I want. I want to consume the best part, the fattest part. I want the best thing. And God says, no, that's the Lord's brisket for you, which is a good second, right? I'm having fun with you guys, but it's, you know, we go to God and we want the first, but God calls us, no, give me the first. Dedicate that to me. Love your neighbor. Prioritize your neighbor. Prioritize others. But if you don't, you will bite and devour each other. Let's go on to verse 8 and back in Exodus chapter 9. We'll go back to verse 8 in Exodus 9. And we're going to cover this sixth plague and we'll close up with this. Verse 8 says, so the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, take for yourselves handful of ashes from the furnace and let Moses scatter it towards the heavens in the sight of Pharaoh, and it will become fine dust in all the land of Egypt. But it will cause boils that break out in sores on man and beast throughout all the land of Egypt. Then they took ashes from the furnace and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses scattered them towards heaven. And they caused boils to break out in sores on a man and beast. And the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boils were on the magicians and on the Egyptians. But the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he did not heed them, just as the Lord had spoken. You know, we've been talking a lot about finance today, and I'll bring this guy up, Warren Buffett, net worth $160 billion, which is a lot of money if you don't know how much that actually is. It's unthinkable how much money $160 billion is. Warren Buffett's 95 years old. The one thing that he can't buy is physical health, right? And I think he talks about that from time to time. He'll bring that up. If he could buy time, he'd buy some more time. If he can pay to be back in his 20s, I'm sure he'd pay back to be back in his 20s to have his physical health again. And so when we go through these, and we're talking about the God of more and the God of compromise and legacies and impact, we get to this situation with physical health, and it's like, well, what do I do about that? Because there's physical ailments that happen to people in their youth. There are physical ailments that happen to people that as they grow old and as they progress and as they get older, things happen to them, and your body starts to change and things start to hurt differently or hurt worse. And it's just, it's tough. It's hard to go around. It's hard to deal with. And I would say, like, when it comes to like our security and how we feel about our lives, I don't think we realize how important our physical health is. And then not only that, I don't think we realize how out of our hands our physical health is. Because at any moment, your life can change. At any moment, you can get that cancer diagnosis. Any moment, you can have some sort of physical issue in your life that prevents you from living longer, prevents you from doing what you wanted to do. These magicians, who another funny little group of people, this is the last time we're gonna see them in the Exodus story. The magicians, the Bible tells us in verse 11, could not stand before Moses. And when I first heard that, I thought that was just because they were embarrassed about the way their skin looked. But the more you look into it, it's not just the embarrassment. They physically could not stand before Moses. They physically couldn't get up. They had lost what they could do physically. It was gone. They weren't able to do that. And for them, it was the boils. Like, God gave them the boils, our least favorite plague, right? Gave them the boils, and it ruined their lives. And I'll tell you guys, as a human being, we got to recognize that there are limitations on every single person in this room and every single person that we interact with. That we cannot buy forever. We cannot buy our 20s. We cannot buy our youth. Those things come and pass, and then it's done. The time you have on this earth, it is quick. It is a vapor, and you don't know when it ends. And your physical body could change overnight to the point where you no longer can stand and serve the Lord or stand before people. And so I want to encourage you guys, just as we're closing up and wrapping up, you know, heading into this idea of compromise in our lives, we don't need to just dedicate our lives, our finances, our future, tomorrow to God. Because that's what we were talking about. Last week we were talking about dedicating now to tomorrow, or now to God. Now we're talking about dedicating tomorrow to God, dedicating our legacies to God, dedicating our futures to God. But we got to also keep in mind that the body we have, it can be gone at any moment. It can be taken out at any moment. And so I want to encourage you guys, you know, while you can still stand, serve the Lord. While you still have the ability, do that. And we want to honor God with those things. Amen. Let's stand and pray.
Remnant of Tucson is a church founded on the vision to see people stranded in sin find life through knowledge and devotion to Jesus. If you would like to learn more about us, sign up for our newsletter, or partner with us financially, go to remnantoftucson.com.